can tell you that when I had a question, I got an email response back in less than 15 minutes. So.
Yeah. And she has been quite ill the last couple of days. She informed me this morning that last night she did throw up, and I said that was too much information for me to think. And it really didn't have anything to do with this process.
Well, I hope not.
Guess she's sick of us, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Now a permanent part of the commission business.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you all. Good job.
Okay, we'll have anybody want to say adjournment?
Move to adjourn.
Yes, sir.
Second.
Meeting is adjourned. If you want to take a couple minutes break, you can. If not, we'll go right into the ED meeting. All right.
When we get to the appropriate place on the agenda, I have some questions for Mr. Merriman.
Okay.
And probably Mr. Berger.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I think we got him on number one on this agenda, too. So we can. All right, we'll call to order the meeting for the Commission on Ethics. Barbara, would you call the roll officially for us for this meeting?
Manny Frost?
Present.
Dr. Robert Fiore?
Present.
Ronald Harbison?
Present.
Bruce Reinhardt?
Present.
Judge Edward
Roberts? Here.
Thank you.
Okay. We have the minutes from the last meeting, but they were quite voluminous. And so let me ask you to take them home if you want to read them.
Okay.
And we will approve them or reject them or make any, if anything was left out or something, we can make an adjustment at the very next meeting.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would just like to maybe address some of my comments to our minutes clerk, who did a very thorough job of recording. And For the committee's consideration, there's a couple ways minutes can be done. One is the way they're currently suggested to you, which is very comprehensive.
I've instructed to just let us know the motions, who made.
Yeah,
the
or we can you can.
Yeah, we don't. In the other lady was a court reporter, and she was used to working in court. She took down every word that was said.
These were seconds. These were not minutes.
So we're just.
That's good. Although, I've never heard that one before.
Are these posted on the Ethics Commission website?
They will be when it's on.
I mean, there's a potential for us to consider to maintain this sort of almost transcription for the citizens who will. I was astounded because you need not have been present at the meeting to understood exactly how the conversation went. And so given that we're attempting to build trust with the citizens, that's a possible reason to maintain
that. That is just so much information, though, for all of us. And it's a public meeting. If any of the citizens want to come, sure, they're certainly willing to come. I mean, they're certainly able.
I think you make a good point, Dr. Fiore. It does take a while to read them, I will admit. But I did also find it a good review for them.
Yeah.
Even though I was here, it was a helpful review.
There are other options, Mr. Chair, as well. And one of the options is that at future meetings, and, of course, at the complete pleasure of the commission, the meetings could be videotaped.
No.
Oh, that must have been a bad idea. But we can't. If you ever get to the point where you want a meeting videotaped for any reason, we can do that. And
we might offer that to some of the applicants from far away if they would like to be. Do you have capabilities of videographers having interviews?
Oh, you mean video conference?
Yeah.
Video conferencing, sure. We can do that.
We might be able to do that from somebody in Alaska or something that doesn't want to come here as an alternative for our interviews. So if you find out somebody who wants to do that.
Who would not want to come to South Florida from Alaska?
Yeah.
Or California.
Probably.
Apparently so.
Okay.
I will say that I didn't get a chance to read the minutes as carefully as I'd like, so if we can maybe table Dr. Fiore's idea and we'll take that up at another meeting, I'd
consider. Yeah. Okay. Next, that's minutes. Director's update, Ms. Yin.
Sure. Okay. To this point, we've contacted all seven of the shortlisted candidates to poll them on their availability for the April 24th date. Six of the seven are able to attend on that date, and even the out-of-towners are able to come in perhaps the day before and plan to leave either Saturday night or Sunday. One candidate that cannot make it on that date is Gail Allen.
Okay.
So you'll have to advise me if you you know, wish me to make contact with her or to offer an alternative. She's also not able to make April 30th through May 7th if any interviews were held during that time frame as well.
Is the time frame we're going to be interviewing.
Can you refresh me and Ms. Allen? Is she the woman with Lockheed Martin?
Yes.
She was the first one.
Yep.
I'm not so bummed by that now that, you know, I've come to the conclusion that we really do need an attorney for the executive director.
And so, whatever you ultimately decide, if you go through a process and decide you don't want to pick anybody, you can go back to the list and select additional candidates to come back for a different process.
What about a video? Would she be available for a video conference?
Unfortunately, she has a commitment. She's physically unable to change her plans.
My feelings, we need to move forward, and as nice a candidate as she was, we have other strong candidates, and my personal view would be we move on.
I second that.
I
agree.
Okay, probably moved and second. Any objections? No. Anybody voting for it?
Mr. Reinhart, I moved it.
Motion seconded by Mr. Harper's?
I think it was Mr. Farage.
I did.
Okay.
And just so I can be clear, my motion was simply if she cannot make herself available that day, I would not invite her for an interview on another day.
And the name of the candidate, please?
Gail Allen.
Thank you.
A-L-L-E-N.
And would you want to complete or just have them write a letter of regrets and let her know that we...
I think if we ask her to be one of the seven interviewees, we should consider our application just on the application itself as opposed to the interview and application.
We could reaffirm that the interviews will take place on such and such a date. If she's unable to change her plans, we regret.
Yeah, and we'll make the evaluation based on the material we have.
Okay.
I would modify my motion to the extent that it incorporates those suggestions. I agree with those.
Okay. All right, Ms. Yan, where are we now?
All of the candidates that we did contact, the seven, are aware that you have requested, as the selection committee for that position, that they provide two additional letters of reference that specifically relate their background and experience to the position being sought. So there's no overlap between the two. So
you're
going to
do the criminal background check or the background check on them?
We do normally run it's a Florida background check, however. We could work with the sheriff's office to do an NCIC or something that's more national of that nature on the shortlisted group. That's been done in the past when we actually did the selection process.
Correct.
Yeah, for our out-of-state candidates, it only makes sense. And SO has done that in the past for us.
Would they do it for all candidates? I would hate to subject one set of candidates to one standard and others to other standard. Okay.
So we're going to have NCIC background searches done on all applicants.
And we would have them on the shortlisted group.
Correct. I should say a shortlisted group. Interviewees.
Okay. And your office makes arrangements for all the transportation and rooms and stuff like that. Is that right?
We do have staff dedicated to working with them on their travel arrangements.
Okay. We're moving right along.
Yes, ma'am. You, Mr. Merriman, or Mr. Berger, or anyone else be sitting in on the interviews with us? All of you?
Oh, I will definitely be there.
Great.
Lenny won't be there. He doesn't know anything about this. So.
And these are public interviews?
Yes, sir.
And we're going to have them at the Human Resources Building?
Yes, sir. That's our recommendation to do it right there.
You have a pretty good-sized room there?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Several of them.
Publicly noticed in sunshine?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. We're down to commission comments. A little words of wisdom from the commission.
If I may, Mr. Chair, just briefly, I think Leilani had a couple other items she wanted to cover.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right. We need to formalize the interview process itself and what components you'd like to see within that. Obviously, you'll want a formal face-to-face panel interview. One thing we've done in the past that's worked well, recently it was for Executive Director of Criminal Justice Commission when we had a board such as this, was we had individual panel members actually submit to me some desired questions that they would like asked of the candidates. I kind of review them, massage them, eliminate duplicates, and come up with sort of a master list of questions. That's been done in the past. And it's a standard group of questions that you could ask of all candidates in this sort of the same order, in the same manner. We also allow typically in this process for panelists to go a bit further and probe an individual's background where there's additional clarification that would be needed. So you could ask questions beyond that set list of questions as long as it relates, you know, directly to the job that's being sought.
That's a good idea. Would give us sort of a cover for, instead of your having to ask somebody something that you think we should know about,
can we see
we can
the
just put the weight on her.
The executive director? And
sure.
Yeah, I'd like to see your standard list.
Sure, and you could sort of get a feel for the scope and the type of questions that we asked and how open-ended, you know, we've kept them. In addition to that, we briefly talked about a written exercise that could be administered to the candidates during their downtime during the day. So we're used to organizing and planning for those types of things, and we could have a written exercise from each of the candidates ready for your review, maybe at the end of all the interviews or, again, during some downtime in between.
Yeah, I'd like them to write after they speak with the committee.
Yes, and they would get a good feel for what's important to you, what are your priorities based on the questions that you've asked. So it would be a good segue to a written exercise that would somehow have them encapsulate, you know, their thoughts or ideas on something that you feel is important.
Mr. Harbison? I think that's a fine idea. I just, presumably you're going to customize your questions to the role that we're trying to fill.
Yes.
And you'll be able to send those to us for us to review so that we don't all send you duplicate questions that you've already written down.
Right. I mean, normally people have given me 5 or 6 questions that they would like to see asked of the person in that position, and then I just call everything together. We'll go through it. We look for, you know, overlap and duplication and things, you know, to sort of get tweaked into a format.
Have you seen the ordinance?
It's on the website. We have not made a specific effort to give them.
Have we told them that there is a website?
Yes.
Okay, so they...
Yes.
I'd like you to specifically request that they review that before they come so that at least their head's in the game.
And could we ask those of us who want to write in questions, you do it by maybe the 1st of May?
Well,
send them
first of April.
1st of April,
yeah.
Yeah, we were looking, actually, perfect date. I was thinking maybe Friday, April 2nd, a week from tomorrow. If we could have a sampling of questions from you, it would be great, and it would give us a good
foundation. Just don't want to listen to you on April Fool's Day.
It's my birthday.
Are we anticipating that the interview will be an hour, a half hour?
If you maybe could give us a sense of how these interviews have gone in the past. Do they make an initial statement? Do they go right into questioning? How does it just generally work?
Normally, I would start the process by just facilitating it, introducing them to the panel, letting them know what's to occur. Typically, we tell them we've set aside a half hour for questions and 15 minutes after that in which to do a little bit of Q&A, some back and forth between yourselves and the candidate. We give them a schedule. So they know exactly when they're on in front of you, what time they'll take their written exercise, what the time frame is for completing that, and how those results will be reviewed. We also would have information. We're researching it now, the costs of implementing the predictive index. So prior to this interview process, you should have the results of people taking that assessment, a management-style sort of assessment online. So you'd have that to review. We would funnel the candidates through in a certain order, and sometimes it depends on where they're driving in from or where they're coming. That's the order in which they'll appear in front of you. I'm usually the timekeeper on this to keep everybody sort of on track and remind people we've set aside X amount of time to get through X number of questions. At the end of the process, we tend to have almost a voting process to see who were the top-ranked candidates at the end of the day. We may ask you for your top 3. And this can go any way that you'd like it to, you know, proceed, but that's worked well in the past as well. From that group of, say, your top 3 at the end of the day, there'll be some discussion and hopefully a consensus on who the top 1, maybe 2 candidates are. You will, at that point, had a formal panel interview process. You will have reviewed a written exercise. You would have gotten a profile of their management style or their softer skills abilities, and you would be able to really discuss the candidates at length. We, of course, would be sequestering candidates within our building to make sure that nobody's feeding them information about what's been asked in the public meeting. So they're not allowed to bring, you know, their BlackBerries or any PDAs because someone could text them, you know, what you've been asking.
Yeah. We ordinarily announce these meetings I think that it might be nice, cosmetic, to let the people know who's appointed us when we're having our meetings. I was just looking at all these people. So I know it's going to be in the paper, but let the League of Cities who appointed me know that we're having the meetings, we're electing these, and when are they and where they're being held. So just the head of the organization, so he can come and check and see if he wants to get rid of me next week. A special invitation to them for everybody who was appointed.
Ms. Yen, I had a couple of questions.
Sure.
Can we ask questions that are not on the approved list?
Oh, yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Second, can you give us broad topics or specific questions, or both, that we cannot ask? I know what we can and cannot ask in a private employment arena, but I just want to make sure that I refresh myself as to what you can't ask, especially in a public arena.
Mr. Merriman, didn't you point out that we need to ask them all the same questions? Is that a hard and fast rule?
No, it's kind of a soft rule. We're going to develop, based on your direction, a set of questions. And what Leilani was saying is if you ask somebody a question and then that leads to another question or kind of goes off on a tangent, that's perfectly okay. We would ask for consistency, and what Leilani ultimately and Wayne will tell you is there are certain things that you can't ask candidates, and they're the things about, you know, their age, their race, their marital status, things of that nature that don't have anything to do with the job. And so we want you to be consistent. You can certainly go off on directions that are related to responses that you've already heard.
What if I've got a strange question not related to a response, but as often happens, one answer starts an entirely long...
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Thanks.
I might want to know why you want to leave California.
Yeah.
Others may not care.
Yeah, well, that's an obvious question that sometimes comes up is, you know...
Why do you want this job?
Yeah.
It's humid here.
Yes.
It's the water.
Okay, Ms. Yen?
In addition to that, you as the panel would also have an orientation that morning. We would take about the first half hour of the day to just go over the process, make sure everybody's comfortable with it. We'd have, you know, loads of materials for you, places where you could take notes and rank candidates, and you can use or discard any of those pieces. But we want you to feel totally comfortable in the process and familiar with how the candidates will go through that. So you're going to go through an orientation process where we cover what is and isn't asked, the time frames we're looking at, how we expect the candidates to proceed. You'll have a master schedule so you know exactly who's doing what in which room at any given point during the day. You have the opportunity at the end of the day, if you needed to speak with a candidate again or to bring back your top two, things of that nature.
And, of course, Lenny and I would remind you that this is a completely public process and that everything that results from the day will be collected from you and retained.
Are these our notes are public?
Including your notes.
Putting your notes.
Public records, what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
Are these applications that we've all received here and those that we have not used, are they required to be destroyed by shredders, or you can just throw them away, or...
No, we have to dispose of them in accordance with public records law. So if they're a non-selected candidate, we have to retain her for 2 years.
No, but you've made seven or five copies of something. Mm-hmm. Can I destroy my individual copy on it?
Certainly. Yes. Yes.
But we can bring them back to you to destroy also.
Yes. Sure.
Okay. All right. Anything else from the commission?
No, sir.
Scheduled date for the... Yes, ma'am.
No, I have a question for Mr. Berger and Mr. Merriman. I'll try to make this coherent. I'm trying to paste together some of your comments at the first meeting and the second meeting. The first meeting had to do one of the sections with our liability for the actions of the executive director and the commission, and the degree to which the county would not be defending us but would at some point reimburse us if we were successful, if I understood what you were saying. In the second meeting, we had conversations about the executive director having to, if I understood correctly, appear in the case of appeals. The executive director would also be the person who was, in fact, doing most of the work during the several years. And so in thinking about this, the answer to the question, does the executive director need to be a lawyer, I want to ask you if you think that we are somehow more likely to or more liable if the executive director is not a lawyer.
No, you're not. Well, because remember, if the executive director is not an attorney, you still have the capability of hiring, I think we call him the advocate, who is sort of the prosecutor who will bring the cases. So you'll have legal representation bringing the cases. As far as your own liability goes, you are largely immune from liability as a government actor. As long as what you're doing is in furtherance of your jobs here, serving that public purpose, you have certainly qualified immunity, and in some cases absolute. And then when it comes, you also have a common law right to having your attorney's fees reimbursed by the government as a matter of course. Frankly, you know, a lot of our officers and employees are sued.
Exactly.
Amazing, but true. And oftentimes it's a mixed kind of lawsuit. There's allegations that the person really has gone off the reservation and is not working in furtherance of is outside the scope of his employment. And in a case like that, usually, although we'll evaluate the facts of each case as it comes, we'll tell them to get their own attorney at that point. If it turns out that that's totally false and unfounded, and the person has successfully defends him or herself, we reimburse the person or even pay that the other attorney as they're doing the work. We've done it both ways.
It seems to me, as I was thinking about this, that anyone that we hire pro bono to be the advocate really has not the same accountability as someone who is, in fact, an employee of this county government. And so I'm happy to be guided by you folks who understand the legal system better than I do, but it seems to me that the executive director should be the advocate as well. I'm just not comfortable with someone who is volunteering.
I might add, I followed up on that myself, and I think that, first of all, the likelihood of us getting quality pro bono counsel is not good. There's a lot of people who are after that within the community, and I just don't think we should count on it. If we have an executive director who is not an attorney, then we have to be prepared to pay for one. But I incline to agree with you.
Maybe this is my bias since I am a lawyer, but. And I certainly be interested in what Mr. Farage thinks, being the former president of the Palm Beach County Bar Association. I know in the Florida bar context, they often get volunteer lawyers to handle disciplinary matters, and you get the cream of the local bar to step up to handle those matters. They recognize how important the matters that are going to come before us are, and so obviously there's no guarantee there, but I am more sanguine than maybe you two are, that we will get really good people willing to step up and do the work. And for all the reasons you implied, Mr. Harbison, it is going to be high profile. It is going to be important. It is going to be scrutinized very carefully. And so I really do think you're going to get strong people to do it. I also have some concern of us. We advertised this job and we didn't limit it to lawyers only. So I'm just a little concerned that we've started a process, and are we changing the rules in the middle? Then we've maybe excluded some people who otherwise would have applied if they knew it was only a lawyer job, or we've inadvertently included some people who thought it wasn't strictly a lawyer's job. So I think we're all maintaining an open mind, and I appreciate knowing what other people think.
But we were told there's no budget for hiring an advocate, so this is...
I think we probably could maybe convince some of the larger firms to do like they do for the governor's office, assign some firm member to us for a period of 6 months or something like that. A lot of them do that.
Manny, do you have any thoughts based on your experience as a bar president with these kinds of things?
In terms of the pro bono aspect,
yeah,
the representation?
Whether you think we'll get people willing to step up if we needed them to do that kind of work?
That might be a little bit difficult unless we work in conjunction with the Legal Aid Society and allow that to count as pro bono credits for the voluntary pro bono credits that attorneys get. But the more I look at, and I've gone through the same process for this position that I did with the IG position, and the more I look at it, I recall it being advertised for lawyers as well as non-lawyers. Am I correct on that?
Is that highly desirable?
Right, yeah. Right. But the way it's, and I recognize that by virtue of the way this entire thing came together, to a large degree, we're creating rules as we go along, because we're the first time, and really this is a new process statewide. There aren't too many IGs, countywide IGs, throughout the state. But it seems that for the proper functioning of this ethics commission, we should probably have a person who is a lawyer. From everything from advising us on how is the best way to proceed.
And drafting opinions.
Helping us draft opinions, which Mr. Berger knows we have to comply with the Snyder rules and have final opinions, which can then be taken to the circuit court by writ of cert. And also by virtue of the fact that, I mean, when we start, if we get to the position where we are seeking forced testimony by a subpoena and we've got court hearings, I want someone drafting those on for us and presenting the needs of the commission in the most effective manner possible. I really think that the position is really more for a general counsel than an executive director, the way it's shaping up to be. So I'm not saying that I won't be convinced it has to be. It can be a non-lawyer, because I'm certain that Jones and Foster or many, many other firms here in town would give us one of their hotshot young lawyers to assist us for a six-month period of time. I would rather have someone, at least as I'm sitting here right now, right here today, who is a lawyer for those reasons.
Okay. We have next one, agenda scheduling, the next meeting. What is left to be done before the interviews? We could have a meeting maybe and talk to some of the...
With the Miami-Dade IG.
Okay, we could have a meeting and talk with some of these people who want to come in and talk to us. Or we could simply wait until after the interview with the ED and have them talk to the ED and all of us together. Or do we don't have to have a meeting just to have a meeting.
You do not. My recommendation to you would be if we can schedule prior to the interviews... Both the executive director of the Dade Commission on Ethics and the Miami Inspector General, it would probably be very helpful to you. So I would recommend we leave that date open, and while we're scheduling everything else, because we're certainly at the mercy of whether or not they can be here on a particular date.
Well, that means sometime around the 1st of April, right?
Some Thursday.
Some Thursday, the 1st of April.
Not April.
I'll send a note to. Should I send it to Tammy?
Well, we're having interviews on April
24th. You can send it to Tammy, please. Pardon me, sir?
We're having interviews on April the 24th.
Yeah, we'll shoot for sometime in the next 2 weeks or so.
Okay, and would you also invite Sharon Brock's office?
Yes, sir.
I think the lady's name was Sharon who called and said they wanted to talk with us.
Shannon, maybe? Shannon, are you still in the room?
Yeah.
Was it you?
Shannon.
Okay.
Shannon's in the room, yeah.
I would like to make one final comment and update, if I may. And we talked about space last week, and then we kind of talked amongst ourselves about the whole issue of security and whatnot, as it relates to the space out at Vista Center. And I had some conversation with Audrey Wolf, and she has suggested, and it's certainly up to the commission, when you ultimately get to your hearings and you need ostensibly a secure location that's set up for hearings, the grand jury room at the state attorney's office is pretty well suited for that, and it's an underutilized space. Everyone would have to go through a metal detector, and it's secure, and there's plenty of sheriff's deputies around, et cetera. So I think that solves the security problem as it relates to what you might be doing in your hearings. All other business could be conducted out at the Vista Center location, and it is set up for that out there as well.
Does that have metal detectors?
No. But it has a nice big meeting room. But my recommendation would be when you have your hearings, let's have them at the grand jury room where it's a secure location.
You'll have to bring in a bigger table.
But for commission meetings, the building is not secure then if there are no metal detectors.
There are no metal detectors in any county facility other than this building, the courthouses, and the airport. You definitely don't want to have it at the airport.
No. Well, parking is what concerns me.
I'd rather pay $3.
We're gonna work on that parking issue as it relates to the downtown locations for you.
Okay. Anything else? Any other comments from the commission?
Excuse me, Brad. I just want to say, Judge, that the this room is available April 8th and April 29th for your next meeting.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
April 8th, I'm not available. April 29th is fine.
Well, that's after the interviews, though. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in my understanding, the next meeting we have of you will be for the Inspector General and information meetings. And if this room isn't available, we'll work something out at a different county location.
Do you want to listen in? Could you listen in telephonically? Or?
Sure.
Because it's just going to be an FYI meeting with some of the people who give us further information. So for those of us who can't get there, maybe.
You need a quorum present, that's all.
Yeah.
And a quorum?
Yeah.
Four?
Well,
yeah.
Well, three.
Three or four, depending on whether it's.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'd be happy to listen in if that can be set up.
Yes.
This is the IG, Miami-Dade IG?
Yes, yeah. And the Executive Director of the Commission on Ethics, if we can get him as well.
If we come in.
I may have a conflict that day. But
are we tentatively setting April 8th or April 29th? That was
April 29th, I believe.
April 29th.
Well, I think you'd like to do it before the selection.
No, you couldn't be here on the 8th.
We weren't setting a date.
You could be here on the 29th.
We weren't, right.
Mm-hmm. We weren't setting a date. We were just.
Well, I was attempting to set it.
Oh, you were. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Evidently, we weren't, though.
I apologize.
I'm available the 8th. The 8th.
Okay. And I was trying to solve your problem
by
saying you could maybe listen in on the information. Because we're just having some of the people who've been through this come in and talk to us a little bit.
I'm available.
Maybe a half an hour.